6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Delegates talk peace while war rages in Syria. UN envoy Staffan de Mistura Monday officially declared the Syria peace talks underway in Geneva. He met with the opposition and plans to do the same with the government delegation Tuesday. Opposition spokesman Salim El Mizlet said his delegation received a positive response from de Mistura to its demand for a halt in airstrikes and to allow the flow of humanitarian aid to rebel-held areas.
We came here to discuss with the special envoy resolution 2254, lifting the siege and stopping the crimes that done by Russian airstrikes in Syria. And I believe we received very positive messages from the special envoy. And tomorrow he will have a meeting with the regime side, and we will wait for a reply from him.
Meanwhile, opposition activists report dozens of barrel bombs dropped in the rebel-held town of Mo'adamiya, southwest of Damascus, while Syrian forces and their Russian allies launch an offensive near the city of Aleppo. Damascus has agreed to allow aid convoys to enter the besieged town of Madaya, where thousands of civilians were reported to be starving to death. Aid will also be sent to two northwestern towns under siege from rebels, Gifreya and Fua. The U.S. Monday condemned last week's terrorist attacks on Nigerian villages near the northern city Maiduguri. John Kirby is a U.S. spokesman.
Boko Haram extremists bombed a market, attacked a village, and firebombed huts, burning to death dozens of innocent victims, including children, and wounding many more.
The death toll in Dalori from late Saturday's attack has risen to at least 85. The Boko Haram insurgency has left 17,000 dead, caused millions of others to flee in the past 6 years. This is VOA News. Israel has lifted restrictions placed earlier Monday on the main West Bank Palestinian city Ramallah after yet another attack that wounded three Israeli soldiers. Only residents of the city were allowed past checkpoints going into the city, while only foreigners, diplomats, and humanitarian cases were allowed out. Regional analyst Joseph Olmert of the University of South Carolina called it a prudent move.
There is a wave of terrorism against Israelis that is orchestrated, unfortunately, by militant Palestinians with the encouragement of the Palestinian leadership that is based in Ramallah. To the best of my understanding, they had some concrete intelligence alluding to the possibility of a specific attack coming out, emanating from Ramallah.
5 months of Palestinian violence against Israelis has killed at least 25 Israelis, while police and soldiers have killed more than 150 Palestinians. The World Health Organization has declared that spread of the Zika virus to be a global public health emergency. At a special meeting of researchers and health officials on the virus in Geneva, the WHO said Zika is a public health emergency of international concern. Dr. Margaret Chan is the agency's director general.
The experts agree that a causal relationship between the Zika infection during pregnancy and microcephaly is strongly suspected, though not yet scientifically proven. All agree on the urgent need to coordinate international efforts to investigate and understand this relationship better.
WHO predicts the virus, which may be linked to neurological disorders in infants, could infect as many as 4 million in Americas this year. A report by the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission in South Sudan charges troops with the deaths of some 50 people, it is said, were put in a shipping container in high heat. The report said the incident occurred in late October in Unity State. It cataloged the latest atrocities in 2 years of war, including rape, murder, and carried out by both government troops and rebel forces. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz defeated billionaire businessman Donald Trump in Iowa's Republican presidential caucus Monday, the first votes cast in the 2016 presidential race, Cruz winning with 28% compared to 24% for Trump.
Tonight is a victory for the grassroots. Tonight is a victory for courageous conservatives across Iowa and all across this great nation.
Senator Marco Rubio of Florida came in third with 23%. On the Democratic side, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton held a razor-thin edge over rival Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. The race turns to the next contest, New Hampshire, a primary election February 9th. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Amnesty International condemns the reinstatement of a Nigerian general accused of war crimes.
He was also in charge of that military detention facility, and suspects in that facility died on an almost daily basis as a result of horrific conditions.
That's Amnesty International's Daniel Ayre. Zimbabweans dismissed President Mugabe's call for Africa to quit the United Nations if it does not get a seat on the Security Council. Both South Sudan government and rebels react to just concluded African Union summit. And South Sudan's military says allegations its troops committed war crimes need investigation.
In a war situation, meanwhile, allegations always come up. And the only thing to do is to go for verification and investigation.
That's former South Sudan military spokesman Colonel Philip Agwo, who is now governor of Jonglei State. And the chair of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee will discuss Syria and Iran. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's post and our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Amnesty International has strongly criticized the reinstatement of a Nigerian army commander who, it says, is implicated in war crimes during the country's battle with Islamist Boko Haram militants. The Nigerian government has denied the accusations, Henry Richwell reports.
In one of the most disturbing allegations, Amnesty International says the Nigerian military executed more than 640 prisoners who briefly escaped during an attack by Boko Haram on a detention center in Giwa in March 2014. Daniel Ayre from Amnesty says the man in command of operations that day was Major General Ahmadu Mohammed.
He was also in charge of that military detention facility. And suspects in that facility died on an almost daily basis as a result of horrific conditions. They were tortured, starved, and even died of disease in that facility.
Major General Ahmadu Mohammed was retired in 2014 for unrelated reasons, but Amnesty says he was reinstated last month. In a report published last June, the group alleged that more than 7,000 detainees were starved, suffocated, and tortured to death in detention camps, and a further 1,200 were unlawfully killed. A spokesperson for the Nigerian Ministry of Defense said Amnesty's claims remain allegations unless they are proven beyond any reasonable doubt. Amnesty's Daniel Ayre says the evidence is clear.
Our report was based on interviews with more than 400 witnesses, including military sources. We used also video evidence of war crimes, including the execution of unarmed men by Nigerian soldiers.
When the report was published in June, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari wrote on Twitter the allegations would be investigated.
We're still waiting for those investigations. They haven't begun yet. But it's unthinkable that someone who was named in our report could be put in control of troops again without those investigations having taken place.
In recent days, more than 150 people have been reported killed in Boko Haram attacks in Nigeria's northeast. At least 65 people died when militants attacked civilians and set fire to houses in Maiduguri. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
South Sudan's government says allegations its troops killed about 50 civilians by putting them in a shipping container in high heat require an investigation. The report by the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, USJMEC, said the civilians were suffocated in a container in Unity State on about October 22nd last year. The report catalogued the latest atrocities in 2 years of war, including rape and murder carried out by both government troops and rebel forces. It also cited the capture and looting of UN river barges, which it blamed on the rebels. There was no immediate response from the rebels. Former South Sudan military spokesman Colonel Philip Agua, who is now governor of Jonglei State, says he has not seen the report, but he said in a war situation, many wild allegations do arise.
No, I have not seen the report, but in such a situation, in a war situation, many wild allegations always come up. And the only thing to do is to go for verification and investigation to see where did the reporter found its report? So that on the ground, he helped to establish where exactly did this happen, who did it. And there's nothing I can say, but definitely that needs an investigation.
So who do you suppose, Colonel, to do the investigation? An independent body or your military will do the investigation?
Yes, that will include neutral body plus the SPLA, the accused side, and the concerned bodies that are concerned of war in South Sudan. So an independent body has been joined by the SPLA and the government of the Republic of South Sudan.
As you mentioned, this is a war situation. So is it possible that this could have taken place? And I mean, I know in a war situation, anything can happen. Is it possible it could have taken place?
No, anything can be reported, but that may not be true. So this is why it requires investigation. Where did this happen?
That's former South Sudan military spokesman Colonel Philip Agua. He was speaking with me from Jonglei State, where he is now governor. The Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, known as JMEC, for the agreement to resolve the conflict in South Sudan, is expected to meet today in the South Sudan capital, Juba. This will be the fourth meeting and the first since Sunday's African Union Summit in Ethiopia. In his report to the AU Peace and Security Council, JMEC chairman and former Botswana president Festus Mohai says implementation of last August peace agreement had reached an impasse due to disagreement over President Salva Kiir's creation of 28 states. Ezekiel Logakuf is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLM in opposition. He says the JMEC chairman is basically reiterating what was written in last August peace agreement.
Basically, the agreement is saying 10 states, and this is what we have signed on, and this is what the government signed on. And it is good that the guarantors of the peace agreement on South Sudan, IGAD countries, they came out with a communique saying that 28 states is in violation of the agreement, and they should be suspended, and then asking for the two parties to sit down and negotiate and agree if there is going to be a compromise.
The IGAD and the chairperson of JMEC also, they said that your group has refused categorically to accept anything that does not scrap the 28 states. Are you willing to compromise on that matter?
We are actually for more states. We are the one who actually introduced 21 states. CELFO was actually refusing or accepting the 21 states that we have proposed. In the negotiation, he was saying 10 states is actually enough. We cannot increase even an inch because we don't have money to run those states. Now, if he has decided that, well, the idea of SPLM, SPLA, IO, headed by Riek Machar Teny, who is our leader, is popular, and the people of South Sudan are for more states, then we are willing to sit down with him and agree what would be the best way forward on these states. But our position is that it has to be based on the former colonial districts, whereby all the borders are demarcated and delineated, because South Sudan is a tribal community. Land belongs to the communities. You cannot take the land of Shuluk like Malakal and give it to the Dinka and hoping that you will have peace in that place. You cannot take the land of the Nuer in Unity State and give it to the Dinka and Ruang State.
The JMEC chairman is saying that the question of the number of states can be addressed through dialogue. And
yes,
that this violation by the government should not be allowed to demolish the entire structure of the peace process.
I definitely agree, because peace agreement, you expect people to talk, even in implementing it. So we have no problem with dialogue. That's why we sent our advance team a month ago to Juba, so that they can dialogue with the government and prepare for the coming of our leader, Dr. Riek Machar Teny. We are committed to the peace agreement. We will continue to implement this agreement. We will continue to address obstacles on the way, but our appeal to the world and to the international community, especially the South Sudanese, the African regional leaders, and African Union, and also the international community, to make sure that this agreement has to be protected, because this is the only hope for the people of South Sudan to have peace and stability once and for all.
Ezekiel Ogakuf is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLA in opposition. He was speaking with me from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Today is Tuesday, February 2nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Still to come, Mark Ouma's sports and our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. The South Sudan government says it welcomes the communique of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, known as IGAD, coming out of Sunday's African Union Summit in Addis Ababa. It urged the parties who signed the peace agreement to form a transitional government of national unity this week. South Sudan's information minister says the government is ready to resolve the stalemate over President Salva Kiir's decision to create 28 states by supporting a boundaries commission, as recommended by IGAD. Philipton Alo reports for VOA from Juba.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, held its 55th extraordinary session for the Council of Ministers in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, where it issued a 15-point plan on South Sudan, including the formation of a transitional government of national unity by the first week of February. The IGAD ministers agreed with the armed opposition that the move to create 28 states 2 months after the peace agreement was signed in August is inconsistent with the terms of the deal. But IGAD also says this should not delay the formation of the transitional government, and it urged the two sides to continue implementing the peace deal. Information Minister Michael Makwe says this is exactly what the government wants.
The government is in full agreement with that, and this is actually what we have been working for. The order establishing the 28 states had already provided for establishment of boundaries committee, and this boundaries committee is the body which is supposed to address any concern.
Makwe says President Kiir's order creating 28 states also form a boundary commission in which the opposition will be allowed to participate in. The IGAD communique says if there is disagreement on the number of states, the parties should revert to the provisions of the agreement, which was signed on the basis of 10 states. IGAD warned that failure to fully implement the deal will be referred to the African Union Peace and Security Council and the United Nations Security Council. Makwe says under that scenario, only one party should be held accountable.
Anybody found not to be in conformity with the agreement is the one supposed to answer. But when you just put it in generalities like this, this is not correct, it's not acceptable.
IGAD says the African Union Peace and Security Council and the United Nations Security Council will be asked to review the process made in the implementation process during the next 2 weeks. IGAD has not elaborated on what the consequences will be should both parties fail to form a transitional government of national unity. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
Zimbabwe's main opposition and some citizens yesterday condemned President Robert Mugabe's call for Africa to quit the United Nations. The 91-year-old said if the continent was not given at least one spot as a permanent member of the UN Security Council, AU members should quit the world body. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare.
While handing over the rotating AU chairmanship, Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe said Africa would withdraw from the United Nations one of these days if there were no reforms of the UN Security Council, which has no permanent members from Africa. He directed his statement Saturday to UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who was attending the African Union Summit in Ethiopia.
We will fight a fight for our own identity, for our own integrity and personality as Africans. Others are real members of it. We are artificial members of it, and we can't continue to be artificial members of it. How can only a handful of people, in fact, it's only America and the Europeans, if the United Nations is to survive, we must be equal members of it.
Mugabe neglected to mention China's permanent membership on the council. Others are Russia, the United States, Britain, and France. The Secretary General of Zimbabwe's main opposition, the Movement for Democratic Change, Douglas Monzora, said the country had more pressing issues the 91-year-old Mugabe should focus on.
It is an act of foolish bravery, but however, it is basically a diversion. The eyes of the world are going to be on Zimbabwe as it prepares for the 2018 elections. We have a crucial issue of the electoral reforms that must be embarked upon in Zimbabwe. Mugabe and his party are mad in the succession conundrum, and they cannot seem to find a solution to that. So his calls are merely a diversion. People should not take him seriously.
Before the African summit held in Ethiopia, Mugabe and his Equatorial Guinea counterpart, Teodo Obiang Nguema Basogo, said there is need for reform of the UN Security Council, which should have at least two permanent seats reserved for Africa. Pulling out of the UN would mean Zimbabwe, whose social sectors such as health and education heavily relies on the world bodies agencies such as WFP, UNICEF, WHO, and FPA would lose a lot. That might apply to other countries with fragile economies. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The chairman of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee says he supports a diplomatic solution to the crisis in Syria, but Senator Bob Corker says current elements make it almost impossible to achieve such a goal. A Syrian peace initiative is currently going on in Geneva. The Foreign Relations Committee provides oversight of America's outreach to the world, including U.S. international broadcasting. The senator spoke with VOA's Senate correspondent Michael Bowman.
Very difficult at this point. I think the opposition that we communicated some with last week has been put in a very awkward place. The humanitarian things that they had asked for have not occurred. Not even the release of women and children that were born from rape have been released from the prisons that Assad is overseeing. So I think it's starting off in a place that is going to make it very difficult to lead to that kind of place. I certainly support diplomatic talks, as I think everyone would, but the elements at present do not feel like they're in their proper place. And what's been happening, as you know, is the facts on the ground have been changing. You have Russia that has intervened, and certainly the Assad regime, because of their support and Iranian support, have been making gains, and so pushing back against the Syrians. And as you change the facts on the ground in the way that they've been changed, it makes it very difficult to get to a place that looks satisfactory at present.
You've been highly critical of the international nuclear accord with Iran. Now that it's in place, for better or worse, do you want it to succeed? And are there things a Republican Congress can do to help it succeed?
Obviously, I didn't like the agreement because of the immediate leverage shift that has just taken place, where Iran now has access to a lot of resources that didn't before, and the fact that I felt like it continued the research and development towards a goal that they have, which is, I think, to be on the verge of having a nuclear weapon. So I didn't support it, but of course I want it to be successful. You know, I want good things for our country. I want good things for the region. And yes, I want it to be successful. And I think where we can add strength, and you say a Republican Congress, I would say in a bipartisan manner, because it's felt there are concerns on both sides of the aisle, is to do everything we can to hold Iran's feet to the fire. Since the agreement was agreed to, they violated UN Security Council resolutions relative, again, to ballistic missile testing. And yet, as you can see, there's been no pushback at all, which is really disappointing at the UN Security Council. I think what you've seen, Michael, is you see how the coalition is going to be going forward. It's not going to push back. I mean, there's too many economic interests that exist from Europe. Russia's interested in selling weapons. China's interested in oil. And so you're not going to see a collective pushback appropriately done so at the UN Security Council. So I think what you're going to see on a bipartisan basis here is, knowing that that likely is not going to occur, is us really trying to define what a violation of the agreement is, and then pushing back when it occurs.
That was U.S. Senator Bob Corker, chairman of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He spoke with VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. Now it's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Woma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. John Ampoma and Janet Amponsa are Ghana's 2015 Male and Female Athlete of the Year Award winners. The Ghana Athletics Association Awards organizer Erasmus Kwau disclosed in Accra on Monday. Sponsored by Liquid Sports Ghana and Ethiopian Airlines, this inaugural annual awards is aimed at reviving and uplifting the profile of Ghanaian athletics. Ampoma clinched a silver medal in javelin with a throw of 82.94 meters at the All-Africa Games in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo, while sprinter Janet Amponsa clocked her lifetime best of 11.29 seconds and 23.05 seconds in 100 meters and 200 meters, respectively. At the All Africa Games, she was fourth in 200 meters. Amponsa went on to anchor the Ghana women's 4x100 meter relay team that bagged the silver medal. Meanwhile, Stephen Mozia improved his Nigeria shot put national record and world leading performance this year with a second-round heave of 21.11 meters at the Vanderbilt Invitational Indoor Meet in Nashville, Tennessee State in the United States of America on Saturday. A fortnight ago, Mozia established himself as the world's best shot putter this year with a 21.03 effort. Elsewhere, Kenyans Jairus Birech and Faith Chepngetich Kipyegon were crowned men's and women's winners at the IAAF Cross Country Permit Meet in San Vittore Olona in northern Italy on Sunday. Turning to tennis, Tunisian Ones Jabeur beat American Anna Tatishvili in sets of 3-6, 6-1, 6-2 to win the women's singles final at the Sunrise International Tournament in Sunrise, Florida State in the United States of America on Sunday. Finally, in cricket, Zimbabwe challenged West Indies in a Group C preliminary at the ICC Under-19 Cricket World Cup in Chittagong, Bangladesh today, Tuesday. Elsewhere, Group A leaders Namibia engage hosts Bangladesh and South Africa play Scotland in Cox Bazaar. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's time now for Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 2nd. On this day, 1915, African-American biologist Ernest Everest Just received the Spingarn Medal for his research in fertilization and cell division. Just taught at Howard University for 30 years. He died in 1941 of pancreatic cancer. Also on this day, 1897, 30-year-old Alfred L. Crowley of Cambridge, Virginia, was granted a U.S. patent for his invention of the ice cream scooper. On this day, 1936, Babe Ruth was elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame. He was a famous Major League Baseball player for the Boston Red Sox from 1914 to 1919, and later for the New York Yankees from 1920 to 1934. He also played for the Boston Braves, now Atlanta Braves. Also on this day in 1862, the District of Columbia abolished slavery. On this day in African history in 1990, President F.W. de Klerk of South Africa lifted a 30-year ban on the African National Congress, the leading anti-apartheid group at the time. And on this day in African history in 1971, Major General Idi Amin Dada declared himself President of Uganda and Chief of the Armed Forces. Shortly after taking power, Idi Amin launched a genocidal program to purge Uganda of its Langi and Acholi ethnic groups. He also ordered all Indians and Pakistanis to leave Uganda. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 2nd. Now, here is our question for today, February 2nd. Langston Hughes documented some of the excitement and disappointment of Black people during what period? Once again, Langston Hughes documented some of the excitement and disappointment of Black people during what period? Send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. You can also call us on 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your answer.
God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people.
That's it for this Tuesday, February 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beck, for reporters Peter Clotin and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, I'm James Butt in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa. Get up, stand up.